Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it is time for our biweekly visit with one of my favorite guests, Dan Feinberg. He's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we love to have Dan on to talk TV. And he just got back from the big 16-day TCA summer press tour. We'll get a bunch of details about that, and we'll talk a lot about TV. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Triple Play Thursday, by the way, so get your requests in for Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. And you can also check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/NickDShow. Let's welcome Dan to the show. Hey, Dan.
How you doing, Nick?
All right, man. How are you?
I am okay, thanks.
Good. So you survived.
In some form or another. I mean, you know, there's a part of me that I left back in Beverly Hills that I might never recover again. But, you know, enough of me is here now.
I think. Tell everybody about the event that you attended. It was 16 days long?
It was 16 days of actual activities, but there was kind of a pre-day. So I was basically stuck in a hotel for 17-ish days, give or take, and the fact that I didn't get Legionnaire's disease is already victory enough, and, you know, so it's all good, but yes.
Yeah, it's weird. I just did a horror convention that I'm a host of every year, and I was in a hotel for 4 days, and that seemed like an eternity. I can't imagine adding 13 days to that.
It is very disorienting. In my particular case, it's even more disorienting because I actually live 15 minutes away.
So it's even
more kind of random and isolating. The whole thing is a strange and fairly unique thing that we do. And the fact that we do it twice a year probably makes it less unique, but doesn't make it less strange.
Yeah. So, well, tell everybody what the setup is and what happens.
The setup is that for somewhere over 2 weeks, but under three. The number kind of varies. Every January and every July into August, all of your favorite TV critics gather together in a hotel ballroom, and over the course of 2 weeks go increasingly stir crazy as networks bring new shows and talent and executives out, and, you know, they try to win our attention and our interest and our amusement, or they try to allay our concerns, or they try to re-spin narratives on us, and we try to counter those narratives. It's an interesting and often very actively engaged reporting process that is probably more engaged and active than one would necessarily expect, given that it's about television. But it's a pretty serious thing, though sometimes it's often silly as well.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about the coverage that you did of that and some of the things, some of the highlights that you wrote about as well. But now, in addition to that, we have the Television Critics Association Award winners for 2016.
Indeed.
Yeah. So let's talk about that.
Sure. We had a very nice award show. I guess it would now be two Saturdays ago. Seriously, everything just blurs together.
Yeah, it was according to this press release, it was August 6th, so it was a while.
Oh, I would trust our official press release. So if there are any typos, I would not trust those. But yes, it was hosted by Jaime Camille of Jane the Virgin, partially in his Rogelio de la Vega character from Jane the Virgin, which was very funny. And no, it's a really good award show. We give out 12 awards. Usually we manage to do it in somewhere around 90 minutes. This show was a little bit longer, but it was a little bit longer because every one of the award winners was actually there to accept it. No one sent video. Everyone came. Everyone gave long speeches. The fact that the awards are not on television is a great boon because people get to, if they want to in advance, get a little bit drunk, which they do at the Golden Globes.
Yep.
But at the Golden Globes, if you talk for longer than 30 minutes or you start swearing, you're going to get bleeped, whereas at the TCA Awards, you can just take the stage and do whatever you want. And it's a lot of fun. We really do, I think, put on a good show, even if it's only for us.
Okay, cool. Well, let's go down the winners here. Individual achievement in drama went to Sarah Paulson.
as she deserved. And it should be noted that our individual achievements in both drama and comedy, there are no gender breakdowns. So it's not a best actor or actress. It is a sort of a best performance by a person in drama in the year. It's very all-encompassing, and that gives some indication of just how good we thought Sarah Paulson was this year.
And I'm assuming her acceptance speech was lovely.
It was absolutely fantastic. She got very choked up talking about Ryan Murphy, and she was very funny at the beginning and very emotional at the end, and all of those things that you would expect her to be. She is nifty, and I would expect that she will be doing the same thing again next month at the end.
I was just going to say, in about a month, we'll probably see a similar speech.
Indeed.
And deservedly so, because she was extraordinary on that show.
For sure.
Rachel Bloom got the individual achievement in comedy. She must have lost her mind because she went nuts when she won the Globe.
She was very enthusiastic and just very giddy. And she also won the award for staying longest at the party afterwards because she's just a good sport and she's still in the part of this experience where she's enjoying it.
Yeah.
And bless her for that.
Yeah.
And you know, given the number of different hats that she wears on that show, I think it's even more deserved. This is an award that always goes to actors or actresses, but it doesn't need to. And the awards are kind of vague on that, and there have been a couple of years when I've voted for showrunners in this category just for fun. But I do, in my own personal internal ballot, give bonus points for actors who are also creators, directors, whatever. Like a couple times, I know I've definitely voted for Louis C.K., who's won a couple times.
Yeah.
Because, you know, his achievement is acting, but it's 15 other things.
Yeah.
With all of the map.
Yeah. And then outstanding achievement in news and information, Full Frontal with Samantha Bee.
Second year in a row that we've given a news and information award to a comedy show. But at this point, who's going to argue with that?
Yeah,
doing that.
Outstanding achievement reality programming, Making a Murderer from Netflix. Outstanding achievement youth programming, Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. Outstanding new programming went to Mr. Robot.
You sound surprised.
I can't remember what the other nominees were. I liked Mr. Robot. I wasn't as crazy about it as everybody else was, but
nor was I. But I'm not. I'm no way surprised that that's the way it ended up going. The other nominees were very good. The other nominees included Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, included Unreal, a few other things. But this was one that I was pretty sure was in the bag for Mr. Robot. And you know, what am I going to say? I know that a lot of people love it, and so I was not surprised by it doing well there. It did not get my vote.
Okay. Outstanding achievement in movies, miniseries, or specials, The People versus O.J. Simpson. Outstanding achievement in drama, The Americans, second consecutive year.
Indeed. Yeah. They are very happy with us because we keep honoring them, and the Emmys are slowly catching on, but they always feel very nicely gracious about how nice critics have been to the show. And since it's a great show, that's a good thing to be.
Outstanding achievement in comedy went to Black-ish.
Yay, Black-ish.
Career Achievement Award went to Lily Tomlin. And that must have been fun to have her there.
It was fantastic to have her there. And also, it took a lot of arrangement and stuff. But we had Jane Fonda show up as a surprise event to her.
That's great.
So Jane Fonda came in around the side when no one was watching, and then came out on the stage as a surprise guest to present the award.
That was a
really good moment, and I'm glad we were able to make it come together. And then Lily Tomlin was just fantastic. She gave a sort of very Lily Tomlin-esque, rambling kind of stream of consciousness speech where she talked about the theater critics who had called her horse-faced back in the day, and it was fantastic. It was just utterly, totally, completely Lily Tomlin-y, and it was great to have her there.
She's great. Heritage Award went to the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Who was there to pick that up?
Valerie Harper and co-creator Alan Burns were there, and Valerie Harper read a message from Mary Tyler Moore, who is back east and thus was not able to attend, but she sent a message swearing at us for the fact that the Heritage Award made it seem as if they were old.
Okay. And then Program of the Year went to The People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story. Not a real surprise.
Shocking.
There. Yeah.
So, hey, the way I figure it, in a perfect world, the ESPN O.J. thing can be Program of the Year next year, and it's all O.J. all the time.
Well, that's pretty much what it's been as far as I'm concerned, as far as what's dominated television for me this past year. It's all O.J.
Oh, for sure, and the fact that the timing was split up in the way it is means that they never had to go sort of head-to-head. You know, they went head-to-head in all of our consciousness, but they didn't go head-to-head for any awards or any kind of general supremacy. But next year, the ESPN thing will be up for Emmys and TCA awards, presumably, I would assume.
Yeah. Now, it wasn't streamed live, but are there highlights or anywhere that anybody can see any of this on the internet?
Nope. This is what it is. Other than pictures and any written record from it, this is the most record that there is of the TCA Awards, okay. Which is the way some of us like it. Others always want for more exposure for the awards, but I kind of like the way we do it.
Okay. All right, cool. All right, well, we're going to take a break. That's the rundown of the Television Critics Association Awards, and you can read all about it online, and you can get Dan's ideas on it from his Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Dan, hang on. When we come back, we'll talk about a bunch of TV stuff, okay?
Excellent.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us. We'll take a break. We get the news coming up here on 720 WGN. Back with more TV after this. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. It is a Triple Play Thursday, so get your requests in. We'll do that later on. Triple Play Thursday, 312-981-7200. Coming up after our interview here with Dan, after 3 o'clock, we will talk with Thomas Edwards Harkins, who is the co-author of Pearl Jam FAQ, All That's Left to Know About Seattle's Most Enduring Band. Pearl Jam is playing this weekend at Wrigley Field, and so the FAQ book series has come out with a book about Pearl Jam. We thought it would be an opportune time to talk about that. That'll be coming up. And we are also going to talk about not the best, but the worst hosts in the history of SNL. That'll be coming up a little bit later on. But right now, we're getting back to TV Talk with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Hey, Dan, welcome back.
Donald Trump, worst host of SNL.
I knew you were going to say that. And here's the reason why I wanted to talk about this. I was watching an SNL rerun yesterday, and they actually reran the January Jones episode. And she is awful on it. So it got me to thinking about worst hosts of all time. And
the problem with that is that, A, I continue to insist that January Jones is both generally funny, but also she's truly funny on Last Man on Earth.
So, yes, I totally agree with you. But her SNL...
Sometimes you have to blame the writers for just not being able to figure out what to do with it.
Yeah. I will say this. I mean, I know that she's funny and she's done funny stuff. Especially like you said on Last Man Standing, but man, that episode of SNL was a train wreck. It really was. So, all right.
For some reason, the only one I can think of at this moment is Donald Trump.
Yeah, so, no, I understand. Okay. I understand. That's the most recent horrendous host. And I mean, on so many levels. So, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. Now, you know, we mentioned that Samantha Bee won the award for the news thing, and there's been a shakeup in the late night world of television. And Larry Wilmore's nightly show has been canceled. Were you surprised by this? And I mean, has anybody asked Comedy Central what their thoughts were? I mean, was nobody watching it?
I think the answer is it's fairly easy, and I think they gave it pretty frankly. It was not getting ratings. It was not doing anything in particular on social media, and it wasn't doing anything particularly on various alt platforms. So it wasn't getting a big streaming audience the day after, so you couldn't say, oh, they're just not watching it live. Mm-hmm. Clips from the show were unfortunately never going viral, as we babble all the time. And the ratings just weren't good. And you know, it was was it a little bit harsh because canceling someone in late night is always a harsh thing? And because Larry Wilmore is so very respected and so deservedly respected? Absolutely. But you figure it aired 250 plus episodes. So that's a track record. He got a major bit of exposure as the host of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and that didn't give him any bump at all. Some people thought he was good, but I would say that in general, it was not one of the most acclaimed, you know, stints in that job.
Yeah.
And it's now had 2 years where it got shut out at the Emmys. And there's just, you know, you have to have some thing to hold your hat on, and Comedy Central didn't. And so the only thing Comedy Central would have been holding its hat on is, well, this is a voice that we really should have in late night, and it doesn't look good if you're going to cancel the only African-American, not to be confused with African-African, mm-hmm. African-South African, as Trevor Noah is, host in late night, and at least temporarily filling his spot with Chris Hardwick. And I know you're a fan of At Midnight, right?
I am very much, yes.
Yeah, but even still, it's the optics of that are just bad.
No, I agree.
I don't want to be doing that.
No, I totally agree. I think it's a mistake to move At Midnight. Absolutely. And
I think it's only going to be for a couple weeks or months. I don't think it's a long term or mid term thing. I mean, the show is after all called At Midnight.
Right.
It doesn't work so well at 11:30. But and so they're just putting something there so that there's not a dead spot, and that makes sense. It doesn't look great. I understand the reasons for it, and I don't think the reasons are disputable. It's just kind of a pity, I would say.
Yeah. Now, well, how did you feel about the show? Did you watch it? I gave up on it. I took it off my DVR after a few months.
I watched it on and off. I was never a regular every single night viewer.
Yeah.
I stick with Trevor Noah and in, you know, 2/3 of the Daily Show.
Yeah.
And that is my regular. And then I kind of duck in and out of probably about a half dozen shows. You know, I'll check in every once in a while on Seth Meyers. I'll check in semi-regularly on Colbert. I'll check in on Larry. And it was never a show that was perfect, but there were things that it did that other shows couldn't do and that they wanted to do and that they wanted to talk about and engage with. And those were important things, and those were particularly important things in the historical moment that we live in.
Yeah.
And I think it was valuable for that. And I think, you know, he made a joke about how the fact that they were canceled meant that that racism is over. And, well, unfortunately, that's not true. And so that's, you know, there will be a gap, and there will be a gap whenever the next unfortunate rioting in a city starts, or any number of horrible things that happen with tragic regularity. He addressed a lot of those things in ways that other people couldn't. And, you know, that obviously apparently does not translate into ratings or into online views or whatever, but it translates into a certain importance that unfortunately will be missing.
Yeah. I've been watching him this week. Just because it's the last week, and have you been watching it all this week?
I watched Monday's show, which was good, and sort of frustrated about the whole thing. But then Tuesday's show was just drinking the wine that Samantha Bee sent them, and mostly a clip show. And I haven't watched Wednesday's show, but I understand it was drinking the booze that Colbert sent them.
Yeah, Colbert sent them booze. So the last two episodes have been about drinking.
We'll see if for Thursday night he pulls out something big and sort of summation-y and if he can find a way to click back in. But definitely the Tuesday show was reflective of a certain why am I still coming to work.
That's exactly what I felt when I watched
it. Which is too bad, is it? Because it's as opposed to, say, for example, what Conan O'Brien did when he was running out the clock and he sort of just went basically sort of creative crazy, and he, you know, he knew he was gone, and he basically did the show that he felt like he couldn't have done before, and it was kind of his nuttiest, best work. Larry has not felt the desire to do that, and I don't know that you can blame him. I think if maybe he'd been told, okay, you have 3 more months, he could have done something like that. But if you're just told you have 4 more nights and then we're pulling you for Chris Hardwick, it's hard to inspire yourself to pull out all the stuff.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what tonight's episode holds, and I will be watching for sure. All right, let's talk a little bit. You know, since we're on Comedy Central, you wrote a piece in the Critics Notebook about why Key and Peele deserves an Emmy for its final season, and I'm all about that. So let's talk a little bit about what you wrote there.
I think basically what it deserves an Emmy because nothing else in the category deserves an Emmy so much. I think more than anything, that was what it was. That it's a category with a lot of the same things from previous years, and Amy Schumer, which won last year and wasn't as good this year or wasn't as buzzy this year or wasn't as whatever, whereas the fact that if things don't happen on Emmy night, Key and Peele really could end its run without a single Emmy win, and I would like to see Key and Peele win a couple Emmys this year. So that's what I'm going with there, basically.
Okay. Well, I'm with you on that. I just think those guys are great, and I hope that they win that evening as well. So
there are a number of categories that they're up for, and maybe they could win a writing award, and that would be something, and you'd feel like that was an achievement. Or, you know, as we've joked about before, maybe he will win one, and Peele will be grumpy in the audience about how he's every bit unequal as an actor, and for some reason not nominated. Yeah. So maybe that will happen.
Okay. All right. Some of your coverage of the TSA summer press tour. Let's talk
TCA,
a little bit.
TCA, not TSA.
I'm sorry, TC.
Don't confuse us with the people who hold you up at the airport.
Right.
We're better than that.
Sorry. Well, let's talk about some of the highlights. What were some of the things that stick out? I mean, you wrote a lot of stuff here. We can go through that. But is there any particular things that happened in that crazy time period that stand out for you?
There was a lot of craziness. There was, I don't remember, did we talk last time before or after things went crazy with Mariah Carey? Was that even on the date?
Yeah, no, yeah, you talked about it. Yeah, you definitely talked about that, yes.
Yeah, that was probably, in terms of just pure crazy, I would say that probably was the craziest thing that went down. Mm-hmm. You know, there were strangely contentious CBS panels towards the end that were a little bit unexpected, basically raking the president of CBS over the coals for a fall lineup in which all six of the shows they were presenting to us that day featured white leads, while he basically tried beforehand bringing out a slideshow presentation of all of the various actors of different shapes, sizes, and colors who had been added to shows just so that they could try pretending that they were inclusive. That was awkward, and he came out and apologized and thought that saying we can do better was going to quiet the crowd, and it didn't. That was strange. There was a strange amount of fighting with critics and the creators and stars of CBS's not really very good The Great Indoors about how it treated millennials. That was unexpected.
Well, what's that all about?
The show is, the premise of the show is that Joel McHale is a Gen X guy who works at an outdoor magazine and gets brought back in from the road to steer the magazine's online team, which is all a bunch of very, very stereotypical millennials who are into the social media and the participation trophies and the podcasting and all of the other cliches of being a millennial and wanting hugs and all of that crap. And it's, you know, the problem with it is that it's just sort of hacky. But a lot of the younger critics took it personally. And I don't know that I can necessarily say that they were wrong to. I've been kind of grandfathered into Generation X because they eliminated Generation Y about 10 years ago for reasons I can't answer and don't, you know.
Yeah.
Don't understand.
Yeah.
So I get to pretend I'm Generation X now, even though I never was growing up. And thus I get to be grumpy about millennials because I know that whatever I am, I'm not a millennial. so I can't take that personally. But mostly it's just not a very good show. Yeah. And ultimately that sin got somewhat obscured by the fact that it was a show that's offensive to millennials. I think it's offensive to people who like funny shows much more than it's offensive to millennials.
Okay.
And, you know, but we'll talk more about that, I'm sure, when it premieres. I think it might be late premiering because of Thursday Night Football or something.
Okay.
But yeah, that was a surprisingly contentious panel. CBS's day kind of went off the rails almost entirely, and they saved it by Brian Fuller coming in at the end to talk about the new Star Trek he's doing for CBS All Access. So,
oh, cool. All right. Well, hang on that note, when we come back, I want to talk a little about that, because Brian Fuller was there, and Brian Fuller rules. And I noticed that you tweeted about Wonder Falls, and that just made me very happy.
Excellent.
Okay, so hang on a second. Dan Feinberg is with us, and we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more with him. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, and that's F-I-E-N. And we'll be back with more. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and for your Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs, Triple Play Thursday. My guest currently is Dan Feinberg with his biweekly visit with us. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
All right. There was a question that you wrote about, how much of David Lynch's Twin Peaks reboot have Showtime execs seen? Is one of the questions you had. What's all that about?
And we basically got a bunch of footage from various different upcoming Showtime things. Showtime basically just, they had the last day of the press tour, the last panels of the press tour, and they ran just, here's what's on Showtime. And they ran Twin Peaks clips that were basically all old Twin Peaks clips. And then they're like, ooh, would you like to see something from Twin Peaks? And we're like, sure, of course we'd like to see something from Twin Peaks. And it was all behind-the-scenes interviews with actors saying, oh, the new Twin Peaks is going to be just great, and there was no actual footage from Twin Peaks.
Oh, man.
So the question that I had to ask, which is a pretty straightforward question, which was, have they seen any footage of Twin Peaks? And the answer apparently is that allegedly the top-level Showtime executives have seen dailies from Twin Peaks, and they are expecting to see episodes perhaps sometime soon. And at least one Showtime executive insisted to us that it looked and felt just like Twin Peaks and that it was wonderful. I will take that with more grains of salt than are capable of being contained in any shaker handy. So who knows? But yes, there was no new Twin Peaks available for us to see, and we're going to have to see whether there will be anything available for us to actually see come even January press tour, when I assume we will have a Twin Peaks panel, but we will see if David Lynch is willing to release episodes, clips, or whatever for critics to actually ask informed questions at that panel.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. Now, you mentioned Brian Fuller and CBS All Access, the Star Trek Discovery. Tell me a little bit about that and what's happening there.
So far, all we know is a little bit about that. It will premiere on CBS in January of 2017, as you say, on CBS All Access. The first episode will premiere on CBS, but everything else will air only on All Access. So people have 5 or 6 months now to figure out what CBS All Access is and if they feel like it's worth their money just for 13 episodes, at least at first, of a new Star Trek. But it is created by Brian Fuller, and it has a lot of famous Star Trek-y names and people, including Nicholas Meyer, associated with it. Mm-hmm. And, they haven't cast it. They haven't unclear if they had actually a script even for it. So it exists mostly in Brian Fuller's mind at this point, but the panel was to give little bits and pieces of information. It will have a female lead. That's interesting. Brian Fuller wanted to tell us there will be a gay character prominent. That's interesting. There will be a lot of aliens, and these are the things that we know. He hinted that it was about an incident or event from Star Trek history that had been talked about but never explored, and a room of TV critics, who some of whom are large Star Trek geeks, attempted to pepper Brian Fuller with obscure references to things that they thought it might be, and in each case he denied it was those things. I am not a big enough fan to be able to tell you which of those things he ruled out.
Yeah.
And
that's fine. You know, I'm not a big fan either.
No, I will mostly watch this because of Brian Fuller. Right. And out of sort of curiosity if he can make me, you know, care about that, because as a rule, Star Trek as a TV phenomenon and really as a movie phenomenon is simply not really my cup of tea.
Okay. All right. So let me ask you about, have you seen the new FX show with Pamela Adlon on it? Have you seen that yet?
I have. That is Better Things.
Better Things, and right.
I've seen I've seen two episodes of that and three episodes of Atlanta. So I'm trying to keep straight in my head.
And Atlanta is the Donald Glover show.
Yeah. Atlanta is the Donald Glover show. Pamela Adlon stars and created Better Things with Louis C.K. And it is of that tone. It feels like an extension of the Louis C.K. comedy universe, but also feels distinctly Pamela Adlon-y. It's definitely the best sort of ongoing character she's really ever been given the chance to play, because she's giving it to herself. She plays a mother of three daughters, and it's not heavily plotted. It's a tour of the experiences that this woman goes through, and it's sometimes funny. It's very raw, and the couple episodes I've seen were very promising and very good. The young actresses who play her daughter are all very well cast, and she's great. And it's a show that you're sort of glad that FX can sort of make room for in the universe, because it's not going to be a huge hit. There's just no chance of that at all. But yeah, it is the show that could maybe get an Emmy nomination for Pamela Adlon, and that would be a nice and deserved thing. And yeah, it's promising. It's good. Very promising. I'm looking forward to watching more.
Yeah, I can't wait. I really can. I'm a huge fan of hers. I think she's great. Dan, hang on. When we come back, we'll get your thoughts on Atlanta. Okay.
Sounds good.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. We got a break for the news here. When we come back after the news, we'll talk with Dan a little bit more. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Yeah, welcome back to the show. Let's continue our conversation, as we were before the news, with Dan Feinberg, TV critic from The Hollywood Reporter. And you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
All right. So let's talk about Donald Glover's new show, Atlanta, which I actually got a text about. People were really interested in that. And is it good, is the question.
Yes, it is. It is good. It is not going to make a lot of community fans happy. It is not the Donald Glover that they knew and loved on Community. It is the actual Donald Glover who has thoughts and ideas and wants to make art individually. And bless him for that. It is kind of, it's meandering and it's oddly paced and it's laconic and punchlines go by and you only realize a little bit later that you were supposed to laugh at them. And I think it has the potential to be genuinely special. I've seen three episodes, and my colleague Tim Goodman is going to review it for Hollywood Reporter, and I know he likes it a lot as well. It just doesn't feel like anything else on TV, and I appreciate that a huge amount. It's got an Atlanta backdrop, obviously. It's got a hip-hop backdrop, but it's just all about the voice that Donald Glover is bringing to it, and it moves in a way that nothing else on TV moves. And you know, for some people that really won't work. It's not as full of punchlines as some people are going to want, and it's also not as straightforwardly musically driven as some people are going to want. It's not a comedy empire, and I think that some people might be hoping for it to be that, but it's good, and it's artful, and it's smart, and it seems to work. And so I'm glad it's another show that I'm glad FX is giving these people the chance to have the creative freedom to let their voices come out in this comedic form.
Okay.
I think it's potentially really, really good.
When does it debut? Do you know?
It debuts at the beginning of September. I'm going to say September 6th, but that's almost certainly wrong.
Okay, but sometime in the beginning of September, so in a few weeks.
Exactly. It's a couple weeks away, as is Better Things. I don't know that this is going to be a big hit. I think it will be a bigger hit than Baskets, because I kind of use that as my as my threshold for oddly esoteric FX shows where they're just putting on something that's going to freak everyone out and lots of people are going to hate it. I don't think Atlanta's going to be hateable. I think a lot of people are going to walk away from it going, I don't get it. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's fine. You know, it's not broadcast television. It's not the show's responsibility for everybody to get it.
Right.
So
okay.
I'm good with that.
It's interesting to see what's happening with the cast members of Community right now, like what they're up to. You mentioned the Joel McHale show, which is a disappointment. Gillian Jacobs has had a fantastic year, as far as I'm concerned, with the Mike Birbiglia movie, which she's so great in, and Love. And now Donald Glover is doing this. And The Odd Couple, Shirley, why am I blanking on her name?
Yvette.
Yeah, Yvette. She's on The Odd Couple. So it's interesting to see what's happening with these people.
Yeah, they're the ones of them who are trying to basically, you know, do network TV shows. And why would you not? That's where the money is. You know, Joel McHale without hesitation said he bought a house and he wants to pay the mortgage. And that's part of why he decided he wanted to try a CBS sitcom. So, I mean, he was partially joking, but he was also partially not joking.
Right.
And very clearly partially not joking, because, you know, you do a CBS multicam, you do it because you hope it will run for 200 episodes, and that's fine. On the other hand, you do a Netflix original from Judd Apatow, like Gillian Jacobs did, you have different hopes. You do what Donald Glover is doing, you have different hopes. Danny Pudi has Powerless on NBC at mid-season, and it's had some creative difficulties that have been very public. The creator just left the show this week, and they're going to need to find a new showrunner, and there are some questions about whether it's going to be able to begin production on schedule and all of that. So that, at least as of now, isn't, you know, a good sign, but they could always right the ship. Plenty of shows do. But yeah, you look at those guys, and, you know, then of course you have Jim Rash, and he's off doing basically whatever he wants to do, and he's Oscar winner Jim Rash, so
he
gets to do those things. But yeah, it was a great cast, and we will continue to see those people for years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, you wrote a piece about how it's been a really dreary season this summer, like really bleak, and Netflix is the cure. Not all of Netflix, I'm sorry, certainly not, but Stranger Things seems to be sort of the breakout cure for the dreariness of the summer gloom. What's been, I mean, besides Stranger Things, has there been anything that you've enjoyed? Because you were talking about in the piece about how some good shows are having bad seasons and so on.
Well, and also it was more about the lack of sort of traditional summer escapism, that piece, because you look at what movie theaters have always been about. They've been about making their money in the summer off of blockbusters, and this summer movie season has been abominable.
Yeah.
It's been as bad as any I can remember, and I've mostly just skipped the movies because none of it looks good. And TV doesn't really have sort of the similarly corresponding escapist thing, and because of the election, it's hard to escape the real world, and because of our sort of paranoid fears about what's going on in Rio, some of the time, or I worried at least when I wrote the piece, that it would be hard to escape watching the Olympics. It's turned out that the Olympics have been, you know, fairly good about allowing you to escape whatever, to celebrate the women's gymnasts and all of that. So that's been good. But no, basically the point of the story was that perhaps Stranger Things, by sort of emulating the king of the summer movie blockbuster in Steven Spielberg and the god of the summer beach read in Stephen King, it's been really sort of the summer's true piece of escapist, enjoyable entertainment. And I feel like a lot of people are discovering that. Those 8 hours with Stranger Things are certainly more pleasant than any 8 hours you would find to spend in the movie theater. And, you know, I don't know what anyone else is reading these days, but perhaps more enjoyable than whatever you happen to be reading these days. But I also, you know, I said that Match Game on ABC has been surprisingly enjoyable and utterly a piece of escapist entertainment. I can turn my brain off for 45 minutes and chuckle at that pretty reliably, and I'm surprised by that. But there have been good things this summer. They're just not escapist. You know, right. Have you stuck with the night of?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. That's not escapist. That's certainly not escapist. But
exactly. And so that's, you know, it definitely doesn't mean it's not good TV.
Oh, yeah.
Totally good TV. It's just, you know, it's sort of twist your guts and itch your toes TV. It's make you very uncomfortable TV. And that's good TV. It's what people enjoy. And it's good. It's not a beach read. It's not a blockbuster. Yeah. And so I was sort of drawing a semi-fake distinction between those things. But only a few more weeks left of the night of. I can't wait to actually get to that eighth episode that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
Getting closer now.
Yeah. By the way, Atlanta's debut date isn't, we found out, it is the 6th. You were right.
Excellent. Yes. Every once in a while, little things stick in my brain folds, and they end up being correct.
Okay. Now, since we're going to be talking about SNL a little bit later in the show, some big news from SNL to close out the our talk here. Taryn Killam and Jay Farrow are leaving.
Jay Rudzinski. Don't you forget Jay Rudzinski.
Okay, yes. he got to do the way, you know, the one, John Rudzinski got to do the dirty dancing thing.
Yes, he did. It was obviously his audition piece, and got to do it, and he played it.
Exactly.
So good on him.
Exactly. But Taryn Killam, now, is the story behind this that they didn't renew their contracts? NBC didn't, or Lauren didn't?
The story behind it is that basically Taryn Killam had a Showtime pilot lined up, and Showtime had been prepared to work around his SNL schedule because it was just a pilot and it was only one more year that he would have presumably been under contract to SNL with Lauren having the option. And obviously they decided not to, and ditto with Jay. And Jay also signed on for a Showtime pilot.
Oh, boy. Okay.
It was very funny because the news broke like 4 days earlier, and then Showtime started announcing their pilot casting at their TCA panel. And it was basically one SNL alum after another. And we all sat there going, oh, okay, well, that makes sense.
That's what's happening. Okay.
That cracks.
It's going to be interesting to see how the show holds up. What you wrote is absolutely right. It's balanced way female heavy now. And you said the male bench doesn't seem deep enough for this. And I agree with that. I think depending on how many new cast members they bring in, this is kind of a big blow to the show, I think.
I don't know that it's a blow to the show. It's just a shift that says, okay, we only have Kate McKinnon for so much longer. Let's milk her all we have.
Yeah.
You know, if that's what it says, that's what it says.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jay Farrow was always underused. They only sometimes knew what to do with him. And he was good because you should have an African-American male in your cast so that you can tell different kinds of stories, and that was important.
Right.
But like a lot of people have been saying, oh, what are they going to do for Obama in his last 3 months? They didn't do a single Obama sketch last year. My friend and colleague Mike Ryan on Twitter noted not a single Obama sketch last year. So it's not like we lost that.
Right.
For some reason, SNL didn't want to do that. So, you know, Killam was... he was versatile, and that was why he was valuable. He wasn't a scene stealer. He wasn't a guy. No one's going to miss any of his characters. So, and that's
well. I'll miss Jebediah the critic. I will definitely miss him.
Is there a difference between missing and being happy when a character shows up?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah,
does not need that character to sustain itself.
Right, you're right.
And I think that was the case with so many of the things that he did. On the other hand, he was a guy who he was always happy to play the straight man if that was what was required. He sometimes had funny characters, and he did a number of different impressions that were sometimes fairly decent, but they were useful. And he was a guy who was good to be able to fill in scenes. And I don't know how many of those guys they have at this point. And either you're saying, okay, this is basically going to be the Saturday Night Live women for a year, which it's an approach because they're great.
Yeah.
You know, give Vanessa Bayer more to do.
Yeah.
Yay. Who's going to say no to that? Give Cecily Strong more to do. But it puts them in a position where they're limited in what they can do next year, assuming that they don't bring in three new men, which I assume they will. But you bring in three new men, there's no way of knowing Yeah. That you can actually use
yeah,
them.
Exactly right. Okay. Dan, always a pleasure talking to you, my friend, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, and everybody can check you out at Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and at The Hollywood Reporter as well. Always a pleasure, Dan, and I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, man.
All right, take care. There you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody. Check him out at Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk with Thomas Edward Harkins, who is the co-author of Pearl Jam FAQ, right here on WGM.